Thank you, Your Honors. Gary Preble. I represent Carlos Mendoza and his son, L.M., and we are here requesting that the court reverse the district court, which granted summary judgment, particularly granting qualified immunity to Sergeant Kipp. The question is, were Sergeant Kipp's actions objectively reasonable, and or was she plainly incompetent? And our position is that she was incompetent because she based her actions on speculation and did not do a competent investigation.
Can I ask you a question that hopefully you'll know the answer? I should know, but I just don't. Is the reasonable cause standard from our cases, is it the same as probable cause, or is it a lower standard? Do you know?
I'm thinking it's about the same. I'm not sure that that's ever been addressed exactly, but I think...
I should know the answer. I just wondered if you knew off the top of your head.
No.
But so can I just distill down then the issue in my mind, and
Certainly. You
tell me if it's correct. In order for you to prevail, you would need to be able to establish that no reasonable officer in Sergeant Kipp's position could have had reasonable cause to believe that your client was on his way to see the...
Tara.
Mm-hmm. Is that, because that really is what created the emergency in Sergeant Kipp's mind for the stop on the side of I-5, right?
That is correct.
Okay, so that's what we have to decide. Could any reasonable officer, knowing the facts that she knew at the time, have, again, that's why I was wondering, what does reasonable cause mean? Either reasonable cause or probable cause to believe that when he's driving on I-5 going south, I guess it was, that he's going to meet up with Tara?
Yes, that I would say is the issue.
Okay, and so why could no reasonable officer in her shoes have come to that view?
Let me go through the points. There's a number of points. Before I do that, however, I'd like to point out what perhaps or probably you've already seen. In terms of summary judgment, taking things most favorably in light of the non-moving party, there are actually several different categories of time there. There's what Kipp knew ahead of time, and then there's what Kipp knew as she went along. And so, therefore, the things that Mr. or could have been said by Mr. Mendoza on the on alongside the freeway, those have to be taken most favorably to Mr. Mendoza, as opposed to the things that Kipp thought she knew ahead of time. So I just...
Although she doesn't necessarily have to believe Mr. Mendoza, but she has to listen to him and take those things into consideration.
Well, that's correct. And for the summary judgment standard, he has to be, it has to be construed in terms of that conversation by the freeway most favorably to him.
But most favorably doesn't mean she has to believe him.
No, she doesn't have to believe him, but I think it has to be most favorably, it has to be taken as to what he says was true at that point.
No, I don't think that's true. That is to say, when we're on summary judgment and we're looking at evidence on the record, we have to take that as true. But when we're talking about what her reasonable action was or was not, it sometimes is entirely reasonable for an officer to disbelieve what the suspect is telling her. Now, Mr. Mendoza is not a suspect, I understand that, and there may have been all kinds of good reasons why she should have believed it, but she doesn't necessarily have to believe it for purposes of whether her action is reasonable.
For example, when he says, I didn't write the motion, my lawyer did,
That's pretty much likely that that's true. Yeah.
That has to be taken most favorable for Mr. Mendoza.
The only thing that we have to take most favorably is that Mr. Mendoza says he said that to her.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we don't have to accept for purposes of this that the statement that he said is true. We have a second order problem here. If Mr. Mendoza says, I told the officer that I was on my way to my grandmother's, the officer may or may not believe that he's on his way to his grandmother's. She may have good basis for that. She may not. But if she says, he never told me he was going to his grandmother's, then there's a conflict in that evidence. And what we do have to accept for purposes of your motion is that he told her he was going to his grandmother's.
I will move on to get to the points upon which we base that it was objectively unreasonable. Here's the things. And first of all, there has to be articulable, imminent, a serious physical injury. There were no allegations of abuse. There was a vague statement from Colin Hayes that said, yeah, here's a motion that Carlos was protected from Tara.
Well, can I stop you there? Because I thought you agreed with the premise that I started out with, and you're now veering away from it. I'm operating under the assumption, so tell me if you're now disagreeing, okay, that the standard that our cases establish would have been met if, in fact, your client had been driving on his way to go meet up with Tara, because there was a basis to be concerned that the child would once again be subject to serious harm. And so whether there was abuse, it seems to me all that's irrelevant. We're just trying to figure out, was there reasonable cause to think that he was on his way to meet up with Tara? And you started out by saying, yeah, you agree with that, but now you're saying
that
something
different. I misunderstood your question.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't agree with that.
Got it.
And I apologize for that. Let me start with this. So what does it start with? It starts with this order she gets in an email from Colin Hayes. And he says it looks like Carlos, or apparently, as the word he used, Carlos wants Tara to see Landon. Excuse me. Do I have to say LM here? In the?
LM's better, but
okay.
It's okay. Don't
excuse
worry.
Me.
Yeah.
And she has this motion. And the motion is just that. It's a motion. It hasn't happened yet. So what does she do? She looks at the motion. She calls it a petition, but she doesn't get the order underlying it. And she disregards what Colin Hayes said. This is the order protecting Carlos from Tara. And so she overlooked that. So she begins by not investigating what it was all about. Now, what she did was, he said that he, and it was inartful, I think he's agreed, everybody sees, he wants to...
Let me just stop you there. So did Tara have a no-contact order with Carlos?
Yes, he had two.
And did she have a no-contact order with the son, with LM?
Yes, through the criminal court.
Okay. All right. So there's a no-contact order with both Carlos and LM.
There is it's not the same order though.
Right. But there are, orders exist.
Yes.
With respect to both Carlos and LM.
That's correct. As well as a no visitation parenting plan as well.
Right.
But it's important to keep in mind that Kip only knew of one of the orders protecting Carlos. There's nothing in the record that indicates she knew about the domestic violence protection order.
You're losing time quickly here. I want to get for me is the most important question, which is, did Officer Kip have reason to believe that Carlos was on his way to see Tara?
No.
And how do we know that? And how did Officer Kip know that?
Because she speculated all along. There was no evidence in the record that Carlos intended to violate orders. Why would he file a motion if he intended to violate the orders?
Well, because he had said that he thought it was really important that their son be reunified with his mother.
That's right. And to do that, he filed a motion. He went through the proper legal procedures, and the officer did not know what that meant. Number one. Number two, she misread. She always said he wanted to reunify the family. You saw that in the deposition. She kept hammering on that point. And that was a misreading.
Here's a question with respect to the reasonableness of an officer's action. It seems to me, and we see this in various parts of life, that the reasonableness of your action takes into consideration not only the probability that certain facts exist, but also what happens if an unlikely event occurs. If the event is unlikely, but the consequence of the event is really catastrophic, you might be quite reasonable in saying, you know what, there's a 5% chance this is going to be true, but what happens if it's true is really bad, you may act to prevent the 5% chance.
Except to follow that, that's assuming that Carlos would allow her, even if she were present with him and he were violating the order, which he didn't and wouldn't, that he would allow her to abuse the child.
No, I understand that. But what I'm after here is that it may be that for Officer Kipp to have acted reasonably, she didn't necessarily have to conclude that there was a better than 50-50 chance that he was on his way to take L.M. to Tara.
The thing is, she had already believed that. What'd you say, Sergeant Graff and I were hoping that Carlos would take us to where L.M. and Tara were. It was complete speculation
If that's what she was hoping for, why'd she stop him? Why didn't she just follow him?
Well, and that is my question, too. And when she got to the side of the road where he was there, why didn't she then fill in the points upon what she had speculated? And I think that is probably an essential issue there. She should have said, well, where are you going, Carlos? She says, well, I'm going to see Yesenia. How do I know that? Well, here's the phone call. Do you want to call Yesenia? She never did find Tara. Just because Tara's somewhere doesn't mean that Carlos is going to allow Tara to abuse L.M. The address of her aunt and uncle and the telephone number a half an hour before she started pinging to geolocate him, and she didn't do that.
Did Kipp know where Tara was?
No, she didn't know where Tara was, nor did Carlos. Kipp didn't even try, once the information was on her computer, to find out.
Right, but the danger from the officer's standpoint, if she doesn't know where Tara is that then Tara can be just about any place, including places that she doesn't typically habituate.
Well, that's true, but then you have to speculate that Carlos is going to be violating the order. And just because she thinks he lied earlier does not mean he's going to...
The problem is that Carlos has indicated in papers that he thinks it's important that LM see his mother.
That is correct, but she didn't ask him. She did not ask him what he meant by that. And what?
Doesn't it seem plain?
No, for him, he says, hey, I'm going to North Carolina. I don't want to be hampered by these restraining orders that I can't talk to Tara. If things work out that Tara is acquitted, because I've looked into this and based upon the information I know, then I want to be able to communicate with Tara in order to resolve issues between us as far as LM goes. That was the reasoning there. And had Kipp asked her, she would have had answers to answer her speculation. And he says, hey, I'm heading out of town tomorrow night. You want to camp on my doorstep, you're welcome to do it. But that's what I'm doing. I have to be in North Carolina by the 12th, I think it was. I've only got a couple minutes left.
Why don't you reserve and then we'll...
Thank you.
We'll hear from the other side and then we'll hear from you again.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Sarah Boehner Cook on behalf of the City of Vancouver and Sergeant Berber Kipp.
Are you splitting time?
No.
Okay.
While I believe that there was reasonable cause, that there was imminent circumstances in this case, this appeal can be decided on the second prong of the qualified immunity test. In order for Sergeant Kipp is entitled to qualified immunity unless Mr. Mendoza can show that it was beyond debate the confluence of factors presented to Sergeant Kipp on December 10, 2014 would not support a finding of exigency.
Well, I guess I'm willing to credit your position that if, in fact, Mr. Mendoza was on his way to see Tara, that there was a sufficiently urgent need to stop that, right? That if the child were reunited with the mother at any point, that there was reason to fear for the child's safety. So I'm willing to grant you that. But don't you then still need to show that a reasonable officer in Sergeant Kipp's position had a basis to believe that that is, in fact, where he was going? Because if not, if he's instead going to any of the other 5 million different places he could be on his way to, there's plenty of time to go get a warrant, right?
Well, and the facts here do establish that exigency, that, that there was that concern that he was on the way to see Tara.
But yes, I mean, there was, I mean, you could speculate that maybe that's where he was going. But I guess I read our cases as saying your Sergeant Kipp needed to have reasonable cause to believe that that's where he was going. And is your understanding that that's equivalent to probable cause, or is it lower?
That is, in fact, I haven't found anything that distinguishes reasonable cause from probable cause, but okay. My understanding would...
Well, then that's quite helpful for us, because it makes it real easy, because we have plenty of cases in the criminal context, right? And I guess I would say... My recollection of these cases is a little hazy, but even if Officer Kipp had received an anonymous phone call, an anonymous tip, saying that, hey, this guy has the one-year-old in the backseat of the car and he's on his way to go see Tara, right? I don't think that that would give – I think the cases are pretty clear that unless you then corroborate enough of the facts to confirm that, hey, this person that just relayed this information to me is reliable, you wouldn't have probable cause to intervene at that point. And all I'm saying is that you don't even, it's not even like she had an anonymous tip that that's where he was going. She just was piecing it together from pretty thin reads, right?
Well, I would disagree with you on that. And specifically the motion that was filed just days before she took Ellam into custody, he filed a motion with the court indicating that he did not believe the allegations, that they thought they were untrue, that he wanted to reunite the family, that he was not did not fear his child being in Tara's presence. That, coupled with the fact that that same day, on December 10th, 2014, he was being suspicious about his whereabouts. He was untruthful with the victim's advocate as far as where he was located, indicating he was in North Carolina already when he was actually still in Vancouver. And the week prior, he had indicated to the court in order to dismiss the dependency, the first dependency action with involving LM, that he was going to be in California. So all of that combined, along with some other, the history here, including the fact that he still had crimes of dishonesty pending against him, suggesting that he's been untruthful in regard to LM in the past, all of that combined I was sufficient to give Sergeant Kipp probable cause to believe that he was bringing LM to visit Tara.
Not sure I'd give away the probable cause reasonable thing quite so quickly. That is to say, I think what we're really talking about here, was there a reasonable basis for her action? Probable cause suggests you need more probably than not, and I don't think you do, depending upon, you might have heard my question to the other side, depending on the degree of danger that she apprehends.
And I think you're right, Your Honor. And specifically, I'd point you to Mueller v. Opera, where that was a situation where a baby was brought into the emergency room, and the doctor opined that there was a 5% chance that that baby could die if a spinal tap was not performed and he had meningitis. The mother did not want to undergo the procedure. And this court held that the officer was entitled to qualified immunity, that the law was unclear on whether there's an exigency existed in that case, but that 5% chance that that baby and the gravity of the harm involved was enough.
I don't think that's right. I mean, we're not talking about certainly the gravity of the threat that's on the other end, if in fact he's going to Tara. That's why I say I grant you that exists. I'm not questioning that. But our cases are really clear that it's reasonable cause to believe that the child is going to be in imminent danger of serious bodily injury, right? So the reasonable cause is the factual predicate that the child will be exposed to that danger. And here, the danger only exists if the one place he's on his way to on I-5 is to go see Tara. If he's going to any of the other 5 million different places he could be going to, that danger is non-existent. So it comes back to what's the factual predicate you have for making the assumption that that is in fact where he's going. And you say, well, he was lying about this, he had this motion. And I guess I'm just saying that to me, that's pretty thin, right? Especially for an intervention that's as severe as this one. You would grant, I assume, that having your one-year-old taken from you on the side of I-5 is a pretty upsetting thing for any parent, I would assume.
Sure, absolutely. But at the same time, she was obviously balancing the concern for the child. This is a child that had all four of his limbs broken, eight bones in his body broken by the mother, Tara. And there were serious concerns that Mr. Mendoza didn't understand the gravity of that and the seriousness of the situation
but
the harm.
I grant you, right. That's why the threat on the other end is so severe. But don't you need to take some steps if you're an officer, Sergeant Kipp's shoes to then verify that your hunch that he's on his way there, that like some corroboration? I mean, I don't know what specifically, but other than just saying, where are you going? And the person says, I'm going somewhere else. And you say, well, I don't believe you. Don't you have to take some steps to corroborate it?
Well, and I think that she was, right? She ran out of time. I mean, this all happened very, very fast. We're at 10 a.m. on December 10th, she learns about the motion that was filed where he said he wants to reunify the family and that he's not afraid of Tara. And then by 1:30 or 2 o'clock, she's learning that he was also dishonest with Sherry Hoffman that day. He said he's already in California. They ping his cell phone. They find out that, you know, he's actually in Vancouver. They locate him. By 3 o'clock, they've located him. They're starting to do a surveillance. And then he leaves in the car, and everything happens so quickly that I think that under those circumstances.
Or just tell me, just as a factual matter, are someone in Sergeant Kipp's position on this day in question not able to get a telephonic warrant as they're following Mr. Mendoza?
I think that this happened by the time that they set up surveillance to when she actually pulled up beside the car was about 4 p.m. within an hour. There may have been time to continue that process, but I think that at that point she's following him. She's concerned about.
So you're making it sound as though if she didn't act right then by having the police pull him over on the side of I-5, that the substantial bodily harm would be inflicted on the child, and that's just not true. There was still time because she didn't know where he was going, how much further he had to travel. So as a factual matter, are you saying that? Because normally I thought you could get a telephonic warrant within like an hour. There's not time to allow him to continue driving? Because the child's not in any danger in the car. It's only if the car pulls up to a house, which Tara is inside, and he brings the child inside. That's the only point at which the danger arises.
Yeah, and I understand, Your Honor, and I believe that there was that she had reasonable cause to believe that the child could be in serious harm if she did not take the child into custody. But then I'll also go back to the second prong of the qualified immunity test, and I would think that there was no clearly established law that would allow Sergeant Kipp to understand that under the circumstances presented that they wouldn't support a finding of exigency. So not only does plaintiff have to prove the first point that there was not an exigency, he'd have to also point us to clearly established law that put Kipp on notice. And I think the
now,
Supreme
would Sergeant Kipp, having pulled Mendoza off to the side, having questioned Mendoza, and obviously not fully believing Mendoza, and if she says, but you know, I really think I need to get a warrant, what's she going to do? Is she going to say, well, you stay right here for an hour, or let's go off to the nearest exit for an hour? And Mendoza says, are you placing me under arrest? I mean, why are you limiting my freedom of movement? She says, does she have the ability to arrest him there? Is her option to call on the phone to get a telephonic warrant as she follows him? And can she say to him, now you go slowly so I can follow you? I mean, what's supposed to happen here, assuming she tries to get a warrant? How's she going to do that?
Well, this is, and I'd have to speculate how it would all unfold. But I do think under these circumstances, she sees a danger. I mean, this is all unfolding very quickly. She follows the car. She sees that Elam is in there. He's in a car. He's moving. Doesn't know where he's going. Is afraid that he's actually trying to bring the child to
She is now out of her jurisdiction. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So could she have she did follow him into Oregon and then asked for the assistance of the Portland police. Could she have followed him wherever he was going? Could she have had them pull him over and come out and say, you know something, I'm very concerned. I just want you to know I got eyes on you. And then continued to follow. Could she have continued to follow him wherever he was going in Portland? She's out of her jurisdiction. Can she follow him or not?
Well, there's an agreement in place that allows the police to.
Mm-hmm.
So she arguably could have followed him, but I think when she saw LM in the car, I mean, how long? I guess that's a question that is not. I'm not entirely clear on how far or how long she could continue to follow him. I know that she had to call the Portland police to pull him over to execute the stop. And then the purpose was to take LM at that point when she saw LM in the car. But if I may, I'd still like to go back to the point of the second prong of the qualified immunity test. It's plaintiff's burden. Under well-established law, plaintiff has the burden to show that Sergeant Kipp would be put on notice by a particular case, not just general principles, but a particular case with similar circumstances that would let her know that under the confluence of factors, that existed on December 10th, 2014, when they were quickly unfolding, and she, you know, ran out of time and he was in the car, then under those circumstances, that would not support a finding of exigency. And Mr. Mendoza has not done that. He's pointed to one case, Wallace v. Spencer, that has very, very different circumstances, that is just not on point. And a case for which this court, three times since that, in Kirkpatrick, in Scherzett, and in Mueller, has decided that that does not clearly establish a law, as when there's an imminent emergency, when there is not an emergency which requires removal of the child without a warrant.
There was just no emergency on I-5 at that particular moment. I guess maybe I would grant you if he had pulled up to some place. I understand at that point, of course, you're going to jump out and try to intercede before he can get into the house. That makes perfect sense. But without, I mean, it's just like the notion that somehow this was a life or death situation on the side of I-5, I just think is laughable. That's not the case. It's trying to predict where he was on his way to that needs to be made. And I guess your opponent suggested why didn't Sergeant Kipp just follow and see where he was going? And then at that point, obviously she could make an investigation as to was Tara inside or not. And then you would save the one-year-old from being separated from his father for, 40 days or something? It was quite a while.
Well, and the reason why he was separated for so long from his father was because a few months later, a court found that the dependency was warranted, that there was reasonable cause to believe that he didn't understand the gravity of the harm that was done to the child, LM, and the danger of placing LM in the mother's presence. So that reasonableness as far as her fearing, the child being in Tara's presence was substantiated in that extent. So, but again, going back to the qualified immunity test, I mean, the one case that Mr. Mendoza cites, which is Wallace v. Spencer, was very different. There was no child, there was no harm to a child in that case. The only piece of evidence that the officer acted on was a tip from a mentally ill relative who had a fantastic story that the father was going to commit a ritual sacrifice of one of the children. And on that one tip, the officer then went to the house and removed the kids after midnight. And then, of course, in that case, the children were later subjected to very intrusive physical examinations, et cetera. Here we have a very, very different situation. There was a child that was very severely harmed. I mean, that risk was real. In this case, as I mentioned, this unfolding of the situation where the dependency is dropped. A week later, he's filing a motion saying he wants to reunite the family. He doesn't believe the allegations. He's lying about his whereabouts. He's then in the car and he's moving. Officer Kipp had been trying to obtain a warrant. I mean, all of this sort of unfolding so quickly. I think in these situations, under these facts, Officer Kipp just was not put on notice that was not sufficient to create an imminent circumstance where she was entitled to remove LM without a warrant. And on that basis, I believe that Sergeant Kipp is entitled to qualified immunity and request that you affirm the district court's order.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I would like to correct a couple things. There was not a dependency found, and that is a mistake. And it's there was a shelter care hearing, which is a reasonable cause hearing, and then the dependency was dismissed, and the child was returned to him, and he took the child to North Carolina. So that was a false statement. Secondly, the warrant, RCW 2644050, and actually I just won a case on that statute in the state court a couple weeks ago, says that the order to be gotten is an order from the juvenile court under RCW 1334. For Kipp to be going out and getting a warrant just to pick up a child was doing the wrong thing entirely. So she was also following the wrong procedure as well as basing herself on speculation.
Counsel, what do you think is our strongest case that should have alerted Officer Kipp that she was violating the Constitution?
Well, I think Wallace, notwithstanding what was just said, actually And I just ran across it, and it was existing when I wrote my brief, but there's some very good language in Demaray v. Peterson, 887 F3rd 870, regarding that. But in terms of facts, in Wallace, there wasn't an order, but somebody told them there was an order, and so they just went on ahead, speculating that that order was there when it really wasn't there.
Help me along with this, and I realize we're going to take it over time, but don't be too concerned about that.
Okay.
So, Kip calls or notifies the Oregon police or the Portland police to stop Mr. Mendoza, which they do.
Mm-hmm.
Was that wrong?
Yes, and actually, I've just briefed that in the Court of Appeals in Washington.
So that itself is wrong.
I believe that she violated the interlocal agreement and had no jurisdiction to do what she did.
And does she have qualified immunity for that action? I understand that's not in front of us at the moment, but in your view, does she have qualified immunity for that?
I think she was Citizen Kip when she was there alongside the road in Oregon.
Okay, well, you just jumped a step ahead. Okay, so whether or not she was authorized to make the call and then to have him stopped by the Oregon authorities, she then shows up. In your view, what's she supposed to do at that point? Assuming that she's quite concerned about the safety of LM, what's she supposed to do?
And I'll give her that a little bit, but
yeah.
She's supposed to recognize that much of her action is based on speculation, and she needs to address every one of those points of speculation. Where are you going? Why aren't you in North Carolina? Why aren't you in California? Why'd you tell Hoffman? When are you going to be where you're going to be? Where are you going?
Assume for a minute, although I'm not asking you to concede, assume for a minute that she's still concerned. She gets all those answers, and turns out he has to give her explanations for why he didn't tell the truth. I mean, what he's doing now is not what he said he was going to do.
No, that wasn't dishonest. He originally had planned to go to California.
I shouldn't say it wasn't the truth. He's doing now what he said he wasn't going to do. We know that much.
He's doing now something different than he thought he was going to be doing.
And what he said he was going to be doing. And he then gives some answers, and she's not entirely convinced, and she has a suspicion that maybe he's going to take LM to Tara. Now, she may be right, she may be wrong in the suspicion, but she's suspicious. What's she supposed to do?
Well, I would say she should talk to Yesenia, where he was going.
Where he says he's going, and Yesenia is probably going to say he's coming to my house, right?
Right. She wanted him to take him to the hospital because she was pregnant and had labor pains. And then he said, I don't know where Tara is. Or she said, how do I know where she is? But she should have tried to contact Tara then. But there was no exigency. And Carlos could have said, look, call Major Haley. You called him back in the other investigation, and he's going to tell you that I'm heading to North Carolina. In fact, if you want to come camp out on my doorstep, I'd be happy to have you do it. I'm leaving town tomorrow night. So there were things she could have done.
Could she have followed him to wherever he was going?
I think she could have. She believed the interlocal agreement gave her jurisdiction for what she was doing. And given that belief, she could have followed him to Yesenia's house.
And could she have gotten a warrant? I think I just heard you say she couldn't. She wasn't entitled to a warrant. Is that right?
No, not under 2644.050. In fact, if you look at the reasons for a warrant, none of them fit the situation because Carlos, she wasn't even arresting Carlos there by the side of the road.
Well, and if she can't get a warrant, how does that cut?
Well, she could have gotten a juvenile court order. That's what she was supposed to do if there was an order to be gotten.
Okay.
So okay. Thank you very much.
We would
ask you to reverse the district court.
Thank you. Mendoza versus City of Vancouver, submitted for decision. Last case, United States versus Tones, Blackman, Carmen.